travel is something that I want to do, but I've never had the guts to spend that money on traveling. I would always get scared. So I think that's an investment that I'm slowly learning to do, and slowly and gradually I'm like, you know what, money will come, but experiences are much more difficult to come. And I feel the older you get, you will get tired, you won't be able to walk all the way to Mount Everest and everything, right? So I'm like, no, I need to do traveling. So I think that's where my focus is right now, and I'm going to invest more and more.
Hello there, and welcome to Ruben's Podcast, a show about people's lives over the last decade and the lessons they've learned along the way. Before we start today's episode, some quick notes. For updates on new episodes, you can follow the show on your podcast player. You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other podcast players. You can also subscribe to the newsletter, where I share my thoughts and take you behind the scenes of my podcasting journey. You can find that at rubenspodcast.substack.com. That's rubenspodcast.substack.com. You can also follow us on Instagram. We are at Ruben's Podcast. That's at Ruben's Podcast. You'll find all the links in the show notes below. Okay, with that, let's get into today's conversation. Okay, so then if you're ready, then we can get started.
Yes.
Should we get started?
Okay, Don't ask me hard questions.
Don't ask you hard questions. What is like a hard question you've heard I've asked somebody on the pod,
like,
which you do not want to be asked?
I think it's a very
You've been listening to the pod for a bit.
Yeah, I think one of the questions that you asked someone that I was like, oh my God, if someone asked me, I have no answer to this, was I think something about a belief that you had that has moved or changed or something.
The shift in belief.
Yes. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know what that answer. And you won't believe, I've thought a lot about it. I was like, agar aaj isne mujhse ye pooch liya to mere ko answer tayar karke aana types.
I'm sure you have an answer.
I have. That's why. I think that was a difficult one. That's why I practiced that answer. So if you ask me, I know an answer to that. But I mean, it's a very...
Okay, so why don't you tell me that? What is that shift of belief you've had?
I think...
why not? You're the most prepared, best foot forward.
No, I mean, I'm prepared, but I don't know whether it's true, or at least I feel it is true. Is I used to have a very strong belief in church, which has moved. I do. I'm not an atheist. I do believe in the religion that I am following, but the concept of a physical church is something that really bothers me sometimes. And I think that's something that I did not see happening to me, because I used to go to church every Sunday and everything. But I think that's something that really moved on, and I was like, yeah, I mean, all for the right reasons, but that's religion is something that has moved in my life. And I was like, wow, I didn't even realize it was happening. It wasn't something that I was planning on doing, or something happened. It just moved away. And I realized that just because church is saying it doesn't mean it's right. So that's something.
Even in college, were you fairly like church going? I won't say religious, but.
I was church going up until 2018, 2019. And I still go to church. I still go to church at least once a month, once in 2 months or something like that. I try to go to church because I feel it's a space where I have my time to myself. I can sit, I can do my prayers. But in general, that association that if you go to church, you go to heaven, that has changed drastically for me. And
I see.
I didn't know that, you know, especially my father, I didn't know he had such a strong feeling towards church. And he's like, you know what, it's all about money for them. Like, I don't know whether I should say it out loud for him, but this is what my father believes. And I just realized instances happening. I was like, yeah, fair. I'm not sure whether they are there for the right reasons. So I think that's why, as much as I go to church, I am not one of those people that church is the thing. So, yeah.
Oh, interesting. But you said it was like a gradual change, but like, were there, like, are there certain like instances which come to mind? The reason I'm quite interested in this, because I have So maybe let me share some of my experience. I used to be very... So when I was growing up, I would go to church because my parents went to church.
Same, yeah.
I found it no use. Absolutely waste of time. Yeah. Especially catechism. Oh my God, I would like detest it. Like, this is absolute rubbish. Rubbish. Yeah. Anyway, then I think when I was early teens, so like 15, right? I think 11, 12th. I don't know if it was me praying to get good marks in boards
yeah.
or something else. Mm. But I saw some value in like, you know, praying. Like, you know, I don't know, we should do the like the rosary at home and all. Mm. And for me, it was like a good time to just sit and do nothing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you had to sit there for half an hour. Yeah. You just basically keep like muttering some words. But your mind was almost like some form of meditation at that time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Wherein you're just like, and maybe of course the potential upside that God will bless you and you'll get good marks in yeah. boards. I mean, that turned out, and we all of us got into Stephen's, so that maybe was some truth in it. And even when I came to college, I would actually go to chapel quite often, because yeah, it was like a very
peaceful,
like you said, you know, yeah. Very peaceful, it was quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes the sermons, at least in college, I realized the sermons were valuable. You know, I sometimes would go back with some new thing to think about. That was absolutely not the case when, you know, I don't know if it's a Catholic church or it's not. I know Stephen's wasn't really Catholic church,
yeah.
but the Catholic church sermons were just like, oh, like, bah, absolute, like, you're killing some brain cells of mine.
Yeah.
And... So yeah, so post that, when I left that, you know, when I moved to Gurgaon, I would go to church, you know, I would go all the way from Gurgaon to come to Cathedral, which is in CP.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would make the fucking pilgrimage every Sunday. Not every Sunday, but you know, once, twice a month.
Yeah.
Because it was like, again, it was very like meditative. I would sit there in a nice big hall, quiet, there was nice music. You would blah, blah, blah. So I've that was my experience. I've stopped going to church ever since. Like, it's been maybe like 10, 15. I'm not 10, maybe 5-6 years, but I see the value, like religion or spirituality plays in your life, right? You know, it gives you a sense of community.
Yeah.
It gives you a sense of, you know, when things are very, very stressful, it's very easy to be like, oh, everything is in God's hands.
Yeah.
And, you know, mentally it's a shortcut to a lot of like dealing with shit.
Mm.
So I'm right now, the context for all of that is, I'm right now at this edge wherein, you know, if I was giving advice to maybe like a 15-year-old, or if I had a kid, right, would I raise them in that way or would I not? Like, would I say, oh, church is all rubbish, don't waste your time? Or would I say, you know, go through the rigmarole, do this, because there is some value you get into it. So anyway, that is the long context on my view and where I am. So I'm curious to know from you, what were sort of examples or other situations that come to mind, which in you're like, oh, this is not very, very valuable?
I mean, for me, to be honest, I mean, like, I completely agree with you. Church for me is a community. Like, it's a space where I have probably some like-minded people, or because everyone has similar, you know, upbringing in a certain way, Sunday church, jao, ye sab, ye sab. So there is a sense of community, there is a sense of closeness. But at the same time, I just feel like the in church, what they teach is just at times not relevant. I don't think if people hold on to things so personally, like, you won't believe, in one of the churches back home in Delhi when I was there, that priest actually made a statement saying that girls should not open their hair and come to church because a lot of hair falls on the church and nobody's there to clean. And I'm like, what is this restriction you're putting on women? Like, men don't have hair or what? How are you just seeing women's hair on the floor? Like, stuff like that. Even at times I feel the sermons are just to diss someone. It's like, we are the best.
Yeah.
Everyone else is like lower than us. I don't accept that. I'm happy if you're teaching good things. Like, you know what? Yeah, people are good. You do good. Good will come to you. Yes, I'm happy to hear all of that. But at times I just feel they're so narrow-minded about things. That's why I don't see a value to going to church physically, sitting and listening to a sermon. But at the same time, I'm happy to sit in a church, do my prayers, because I don't have faith. I do have faith. I do believe, like, you know, there is a super, there is power up there, and there is someone who is helping me from day to day basis. But does it happen that if I sit in the church, then only the, you know, power will help me? No, I don't believe that anymore. I used to believe that, oh, if I don't go to church, you know, this will not come to me. If I don't go to church, I will not get good marks and everything. But that has moved. I have faith. I do my prayers. I do rosary and everything. But at the same time, I've lost the concept that even gender, like I'm in the middle of planning my wedding. My God, the amount of money they're asking me just to do a wedding in the church. And I'm like,
the church is asking you money to get married
in the
church. It supposed to be a bloody sacrament of marriage, which they're supposed to like give out?
Yes, but because I am not getting married in the church where my parents are registered, it's not free for me. So because we are getting married in Kottayam and my parents are in a different city in Kerala, so it's not the same church. So just to cover electricity and blah, blah, bills of it, they're charging me a bomb. And I was like, I don't think ek din ka electricity bill itna aata hai. And that's the thing, right? Initially, he said a certain amount. And then my parents said, okay, you know, the kids are in Australia. Okay. No, actually, it's Y. And so from X, it went to Y. And I was like, just because...
And Y is higher than X.
Of course. And I was like... Wow, literally in one conversation, you've upped your price because we're in Australia. So that's when you realize that, boss, ye pa the paise ke alawa, it's not like a lot of people are choosing not to get married in church. At least we still have that you know what, yeah, let's take the blessing of the church and move forward in our life. Be appreciative of that. Don't try to rip us off. So that's something that has drastically changed.
It is. I agree. Yeah. So maybe just as since we are on this topic, you can just answer yes, no. We don't have to like deep dive into it. And if you want to remove, you can just remove it all. But yes, no. So you believe in Jesus?
Yes.
Is that a yes or no?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Got it. So you're still like, okay, Jesus is there.
Yeah.
But you don't believe. Or like, so the only thing is you don't believe in like authority of the church.
Yes.
You're like,
yes. Okay, I don't believe that Jesus is sitting in church. And if I go to church, then only Jesus will come in my life. I believe Jesus is everywhere. Okay. As long as you are a good person and you do good, good will come to you. That's my basic funda. Like, kindness will come to you. There is no correlation between going to a church and being a good person. There is no correlation. That's something that I figured.
Got it. Okay. Awesome. Have you tried, like, I know in Singapore, I won't call it, well, I'll caveat that this is not the right word to use, but you know, it's easiest to understand. Have you tried church shopping, wherein you go visit different kind of churches and see where, you know, it's something which you like vibe with a bit more?
Nah.
Because here, for example, I know, so Singapore is quite a religious society.
Yeah.
There are, you know, a lot of Christians, very devout Christians. Mm. But I've in my conversations with people here, it's quite common when they go to a church, they're like, oh, this church is not for me. They go to another church and they're like, you know, I really like this church. You should come try it out. So it's very like, you know, come. Attend, be part, see if you know you like it. If you like it and you're getting what you need, stay. If you don't like it, just move, like go try another church. Of course, it's not a Catholic. It's another thing I realized. People refer to Catholics and Christians. I was interesting. So, but have you tried doing that? Like going, seeing there are other churches which are more relevant? Because like I have a lot of friends, I respect them, they are smart people. And sometimes I wonder, maybe like I like similar to you, I think I would still believe that there is like, you know, there's superpower we know above. It was just maybe the church I went to was useless. You know, just like maybe sometimes the class you attend is useless or a doctor you go to is useless, right? You just need to change. And you don't have to give up in the belief of like maybe, I know, doctors in school, right? So I'm curious, have you tried doing that?
No, I haven't. I mean, there are a lot of options which I keep telling my partner, we should go here. He doesn't come to church at all. He is not.
Okay.
He's like, okay, I have faith, but church is something that I'm completely anti. So he, the thing is, I'm one of those people. I'm not I'm not someone who's motivated by myself. So if there's anything that I need to do, I prefer doing it with someone or a group or blah, blah, blah. So I was like, I don't want to go alone. I need a company for this. I mean, especially it's like church and I'm like, you guys, so he doesn't come with me. So it's like, that's why I haven't tried it, but that's a good thing. I should try it. There are a lot of different community churches here, you know, Protestants and whatever different kinds of Christians that are there. I think they do have a different approach to the way they teach the Bible and everything. So I think that's a good idea, but I haven't tried and I don't know when I'll get an opportunity to try it.
Yeah, me neither. I haven't tried, but I think that's like a thought which has come to mind, because like I said, I think I do miss the sense of having a community. Sometimes when you think about it, when you move to a new city or you move to a new place, church is actually the best place to find a group of like people, right? Which I think solves a lot for like a sense of, you know, belonging. And I do think the stuff which is written in the Bible is relevant. Like it's thousands and thousands of years old. Like it wouldn't be rubbish if it was like not true, right? It wouldn't have survived that long. So there is value in the stuff which is written there. Just that I think...
I just feel like it's so open to interpretation, and just people at times just use it to manipulate a group of people to do things, though. So I just feel like it's very conveniently misinterpreted as per like, oh, this is what I want the people to do. So let me just interpret it. This is what Jesus said. I said, no, that's not, I don't think so. That's what Jesus said. So I think it's open to interpretation. So I don't know whether, you know, it is valuable to some people. It might not be valuable to some people, but at the same time, I just feel like the scene that church puts up with the overall, you know, activities and all, I just find it too bizarre.
Last maybe comment on this one. I think it's interesting when you, and you studied history in college, it's interesting when you look back, is, you know, the church and the state for a long time were just the same entity. Today we have government and we have church, which are separate entities, but that was not the case forever. You know, historically the church and government were the same thing, and now it sort of has decoupled. And you know, I will go one step ahead to be like, right now, you know, there are a few other things which are decoupling historically, like, you know, money and government have always been, you know, highly coupled. I think that is going to like decouple in the future, but also spirituality and church have been coupled in the past. And I think that is like, will decouple. So I think like church as an organization is relevant. I think some facets of that organization are failing to keep up. They just need to keep up. I don't think people do not want it. They just need to keep up. Anyway, enough of spiel of church. That was a rather interesting start of this episode. So if we've lost people, we've already lost them in 16 minutes. But anyway, so maybe let me give you a quick for listeners. Let me give you a quick brief on what Linda has been up to over the last decade. So Linda and I went to Stevens together from 2010 to 2013. You did not stay in Res. You were staying in Delhi.
Yes.
No.
Yes, I was in Delhi.
You were in Delhi. Yeah, you were in Delhi, so you weren't in Res. But I would say you were like quasi Res. You used to see you quite around. You're not one of those day skis who just run away as soon as class got over. So you would hang around quite a bit.
I would hang around, but not as much as I would have wanted to. I feel like my parents were so strict that I had to run back home at some point or the other. So I would have enjoyed it more, because I hear people's experiences and it's so different from people who stayed in college more often than I did. So I would have liked it. Yeah.
Okay. So till 2013, you were at Stephens together. Right after Stephens, you went to Bombay and you were there for a few years. You studied PR and corporate comms at Xavier's Institute of Communication. You then started working in PR. That was your first job. You spent like about a year there. You then moved to work at some interesting companies, which I think are common household names. So you worked at Tata Sky for a bit. You worked at Shimaru. For people who don't know Shimaru, oh my God, like you should look at like the, like when you were growing up, all the music had like that Shimaru logo up in the corner. I think the best way to think about it is it's like a music label which produced, I think,
movies, probably all the content, music.
All content up to maybe like even the like early 90s, if not early 2000s. Now maybe not that much, but that was Shimaru. That was pretty cool. And then you went to the fascinating rising world of OTT. So you were at G5. And then eventually Viacom's OTT platform. You spent till about, I think, 2018, 2019 doing a bunch of this stuff. Were you in Bombay all this time?
Yeah, I've only worked in Bombay after I studied there. So I've not worked anywhere else except for Mumbai. And wow. I was, until the pandemic, I was working with Viacom till 2022, last year.
Oh, wow. So that
last year, September is when I quit, because I moved to Australia in March and they gave me the option to work from home because everyone was working from home, but I was working from home from Australia. So they did, help me.
Amazing.
They let me work. So, and then when I, the time difference gets to you, I was like, oh my God, I cannot stay up till 10 o'clock to do my Indian job. I had to quit and find something in Australia. But they were quite, because everyone was working from home at that point, they were pretty comfortable with me also working from Australia. But that was like for about 3-4 months. That's it. So I was working till 2022.
Okay. Wow, they're very recent. So until 2022, you were at Viacom. And then I think, as you mentioned, you moved to Australia in 2022. You started doing your MBA. You're currently in the process of doing the MBA. You switched over to hospitality. So you started to a big sort of swing from, product and ODTs to you now work in hospitality at the Accor Group. For people who don't know what the Accor Group is, it's a bunch of, it's like the umbrella brand for a bunch of hotels. I think Pullman is one common one. I'm sure Linda can share some others when we talk about that. And you're right now, as I think you also mentioned, planning for your wedding.
Yes.
In about a month, negotiating with the church on what a good price is going to be to get the sacrament of matrimony. We probably release this after your marriage so that in case they hear this, they'd be like, what blasphemy.
I swear, so I was going to say, wait for some of you.
The price will go up even more.
Oh, yeah, they're like, "Achha, you're dissing us, too, Rook."
There's an additional tax. But that's what Linda has been up to over the last decade. I also will do a shameless plug on Linda's also a happy listener of the podcast.
Oh.
So you should say some good things about why people should listen to more episodes of the pod.
Yeah.
But it's okay. I'm enough of self praise. But anyway, as we look back, Linda, what is your favorite memory from your time at Stephens, 2010 to 2013? Three good years. What is your favorite memory from your time then?
I was really scared to be at Stephens. I mean, because it's such a big deal. Everyone would talk like, you're in Stephens, I was so scared for first few months. I was even scared to speak to people. In fact, I was so Delhi so West Delhi, I should say, that I didn't even know the certain schools people came from. And then I had to go home and search, achha, ye toh bahut achhi schools hai. Like, I had no idea, like, the quality of people that come to Stephens. I knew it's a good college. But when I started meeting people, I was like, oh, bhai sahab, main West Delhi se aayi hoon aur ye log toh matlab crazy types. So for me, it was initially quite scary. But I think best memories were with just, man, like, I just realized everyone's just so friendly. Like that concept of, oh, we are Stephenians, that arrogance is not there. And people were quite friendly. And, even classmates, I was amazed that I became friends with some people in hindsight. I was like, wow, dude, I never expected I would be friends with like the topper of history, Surbhi, and all of these people. Like it was quite a shocker for me. But I think overall, just meeting people and hanging out with friends was just so, it's a memory that I always hold on to. And the other thing was between Stephens and Xavier's. I mean, Xavier's is another institute that everyone keeps talking about because you see it in movies. When I went to Xavier's, oh my God, that's when I had newfound respect for Stephens. The Xavier's College is just one building, dude. It's like a quadrangle, that's it. And I was like, what? you should come to Stephen's, people. Like, the facilities, the lawns, the overall vibe of the College of Stephen's is so different that I don't think people in Bombay would ever experience it. I think that's something that I enjoyed much later. I had a newfound respect. I said, dude, lawn ki yaad aa rahi hai, iski yaad aa rahi hai. Like, in Xavier's, you could just sit in one place. That's it. So I think that was something that was quite... this thing. And I think apart from that, I think there were certain, like, you know, drinking evenings and stuff like that which we did in Stephen's, which was my first time, because I come from a girls' school, and my parents were extremely strict when we were growing up. We were not allowed to do anything. We were not allowed to meet friends and everything. So it was quite strict for me. And then, you know, Stephen's being Stephen's, his college experience, you know, jhoot bhool ke jaate hai ye ho. It was that all of that was new to me. I don't know whether people experienced that in their school days when they came to, you know, Stephen's. But mere liye to kuch bhi nahi tha. For me, I think in entire Stephen's for 3 years, I must have had like a night out only 3 times. That's it. Like, probably.
Really?
Yeah. I was literally not allowed. Like, I think last year, mein phir bhi, you know, twice I stayed at Soupy's house. That's about it. Like, I wasn't allowed to, you know, not just me, my sister also wasn't allowed to. Probably because my parents are from Delhi. So they were like, you know, ki nahi nahi bhai, it's not safe types. I never experienced that night out life and everything in Delhi. It was everything that I experienced was in Bombay, in Xavier's. So for me, I think... Stephen's was a good experience, fun experience meeting people and idhar udhar ki choti choti stories. But apart from that, I don't think I have a crazy story in Stephen's. I think I heard someone's story about, you know, something being on fire and everything in res. Some story someone was sharing. And I was like, what? I didn't even know this happened. So I think I wasn't that well aware when I was in Stephen's about what's happening in res and stuff like that. So I missed out, I feel.
Yeah. I mean, you're glad that you missed out on that whole fire shit show, because all of us were like dancing around to the principal's office. Our parents were getting notices. We got thrown out of like res temporarily.
Yeah.
So you didn't miss much. But yes, there was a night where one room was on fire. And to be honest, I still do not know the reality, like what actually happened that night. We just know that who did it, how did it happen. Yeah, it was quite a shit show. But yeah, at least you came from Delhi. I came from Faridabad. So when I remember the first time I heard, oh, I'm a Mano, like M-U-N. I was like, what is an M-U-N?
Oh, yeah.
You know, Model United Nations, all these, like the...
That was
all the DevShock kids were like, oh my God, I'm like, what is a Mano? Like, and they're like, oh, you know, I'll be this country. And what do you mean you can be a country? And I'm like, my God, these people, not only is this a whole new world, some kids have been doing this for the last 2 years of their life.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, like this is just like mind blowing.
Yeah. And I feel like some kids also had like families who've been in Stephen's. So it was such a big deal. Like, you know what, papa gaye the school, college, mein to mujhe bhi jana hai karke. So they all understood. I mean, or at least they were, you know, they were in that family which understood how to be in Stephen's. I was like, oh my God, mujhe to pata bhi nahi tha ki it was such a thing to be in Stephen's. I was like, mil gaya bhai, Christian Kota ke badolat, mujhe aur kuch nahi chahiye. And you won't believe, I was one of the lucky people. My sister, she scored much higher than me in boards. But for her, when she was looking for Stephen's, she's 1 year older than me. So when she was looking for college admissions, Stephen's that year had a different cutoff for different Christian people. So if you're a Catholic, you had X. If you're a Protestant, you had Y. If you're some Christians of North India, you are Z. So different communities within Christianity had different cutoffs. So she couldn't make it because Catholics were like really like they for ECO or something, they had like 93-94%. For Christians or something. And I was like, yaar ye to quota to lag nahi raha bhai, matlab 94% lane ke liye uske quota mein ho tumhe kaise yoga hai. So and my sister had like 90. It wasn't even like she was like at 70. So what difference? She was like, dude, I missed by 2% or 3% something. But in my year, or in our year, all of Christians were put together in 1%. So that is how I got saved. And my sister would be like, what the hell, dude? So I think that was something that saved me.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was your favorite memory of the time in college. You then went to Xavier's and lived in Bombay for ever since 2013. So that was almost 2013 to 2022-ish.
Yeah.
So that's almost 10 years. When you compare Delhi to Bombay, tell me what you like about Bombay and what you don't like about Bombay in your 10 years there.
I think, at least for me, Bombay was freedom because I was independent. Mm. I could do whatever I want to do. I just did not had I was not answerable to anyone saying that kitne baje ghar aaoge, kitne baje so rahe ho, kitne baje uth rahe ho types. I did not have that. So I think that was a good thing. I got my own piece of freedom. I was enjoying. And I think the good thing is when you move out of home, you realize the value of money and you understand how everything works from electricity to, you know, daily. How do you manage your finances? I think that's something that I learned in Bombay. The one thing that I missed terribly in Bombay is food. Food is, I'm just surprised. I mean, they have good international food, but Indian food, like North Indian food, is not as good as Delhi had, or the street. I mean, I know Bombay is known for street food and all, but I love my Delhi street food. So that's something that I really missed. And I feel like Bombay literally never sleeps. If you're in Bombay, something or the other is always happening. Like, I would travel at 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning without being scared. So I think that's something that I really enjoyed about Bombay. And I feel like people really don't care. People, not in a bad way, but they really don't give a shit about what you're doing. They don't want to interfere.
So they don't judge.
Yeah, they don't judge. They don't interfere. They don't like, acha, tu kya kare? Kitne baje aa rahe? Oh, you know, pados wali auntie, they're not looking at what time you're coming or who's coming with you and all of that stuff. I really think people in Bombay are just so busy with their own lives that they don't give a shit about tumhe jo karna hai karo, bhaad mein jao type, mera dimag mat khao type. Yeah. I think that's an attitude that I really like.
Yeah.
Like, you could do your own shit and nobody would give a fuck about it. So that's something that I really like and appreciate about Bombay in general.
And how does that compare to now in Australia? Like, sorry, where in Australia are you currently?
I'm in Sydney.
Sydney. Yes. So how does that compare to Sydney? I know Sydney goes to sleep at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And like after 5 or 6 o'clock, nothing is open.
Oh my God. It was such a shock for me. I was like, bhai, ye kya ho raha hai? When firstly, the population of Australia, Sydney is so less than the population of Delhi, Mumbai, wherever I've been. At 6 or 7 in the evening, I was, for the first few weeks when I was coming back home, I was like, I was telling my partner, I said, dude, yahan pe sadak pe koi nahi, meri bahut phat rahi, I can't come. Because that's the thing, right? When there's nobody in Delhi, if I'm coming home late at like 11 or 12, whatever, or in Bombay also, if there's nobody, I would want someone to drop me home because there's nobody on the street. Yahan par 6 bajte log nahi, and I was like, mere ko meri phat rahi hai, yaar tu aake mujhe station pe utha type. And he's like, nahi nahi, aaja aaja, koi stress nahi. And the fact that there are so less people is like, it's a good thing, but at the same time, I miss, like, you know, having people around. And you're right, Sydney shuts at 5 o'clock. Matlab, after office, agar tumhe kuch khareedna bhi hai, toh you can't. It is, I was like, okay, khana khane 6 baje kha ke 7 baje so jao. It's like restaurants also shut at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock or something like that. That's the thing that people think that, and that's newfound respect for India also, is the services and the facilities that you have in India is amazing. मतलब रात के 12 बजे तुम्हें बटर चिकन चाहिए, तुम्हें बटर चिकन मिलेगा. यहाँ पे रात के 12 बजे McDonald's के अलावा you don't get anything else. So that is like, I was like, oh my God, I miss my Dunzo, I miss my Swiggy, everything. Like last year was such a, and that's the thing. My partner doesn't miss it or doesn't know because he left India in 2014, 2015. So it's been like 8-9 years. So he didn't see the evolution of Swiggy coming in, Dunzo coming in, you know.
Correct.
You know, everything that we saw, like facilities are just there.
Yeah.
Services are just there on a click of a button. He didn't experience. So he didn't understand what I was saying. I was like, no, dude, India is way ahead of, you know, what people would consider India to be.
Yeah.
So that's something that is, I'm still getting used to. I still sit and cry.
Yeah. It's so fascinating, right? Even me, like, it's been maybe like 5 years since I left. Like, I was living full time in India. And when you see some small things, it's so like weird that, oh my God, India is like quite far ahead as compared to, you know, what we see around. At least for me, like payments, right? Because I also work in payments now.
Mm.
I'm like, how, like, this whole UPI stuff, I'm like, how easy it is to, you know, pay. And this time when I went back, like, a few months ago, it was so shocking that we've reached a point wherein people just will not take cash.
Yeah.
Everybody will just be like, okay, here's, scan my QR. And I'm like, hey, I don't have, whatever, my accounts are deactivated, blah, blah. I don't have cash. I have a 500. Can you give me change? It's like, oh no, I don't have it. And not one, everyone. And I'm like, my God, like, this is such a big change.
Yeah.
And you know, like, Southeast Asia, I work here. A lot of these countries are trying to get there. And they are, you know, very far away.
Mm.
I'm like, my God, India's like so much ahead.
Mm.
But even like what you said, right? Like the ability to just be like, yeah, I'll just dunzo it. Like,
yeah.
Even when I go back, everybody's like, oh, let's dunzo it. I'm like, what? You're just going to dunzo like one can of, one packet of milk? Like,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, why not?
It's like when I was
in... And the crazy thing is, you'll dunzo it and then 20 minutes later, oh, fuck, I forgot something. Dunzo again. I'm like, my God.
Dude, it's like, if you need
that is crazy.
Some, and that's the thing, right? The service is so good. Like, it's not like you don't have delivery services here. But if you have to get it delivered tomorrow, you need to order 2 days in advance. Tab ja ke aayega.
Yeah.
In India, you're like, abhi order kiya 15 minute mein aa jayega. And I was like, dude, shit, that's too good of a service. And that's the thing that I guess it's the perk, or when you have such a big population, your services will boom like that. It doesn't boom like that here. You don't have that many people to cater to. So it takes time for you to build a business, get people used to that habit of doing things and everything. It's just very different. So I think that's something that is a perk when you have such a big population. But at the same time, I mean, and it's not that expensive, because even if you crack 10%, 1% of the market, you're able to make money. And that's why you can keep the cost so low. Whereas here, you can't keep the cost low, because by the time adoption comes in and everything, it's, you are losing money. So that's why the cost of doing that business is so much higher here, that I have to think twice, ki achha delivery karu ya main khud jake karu ye sab, right? Whereas in India, I'm like, ah, okay, guys, swipe, done. That's it. So I think that's also makes a very big difference.
Yeah. But giving sort of Sydney some brownie points, what have you enjoyed, or what have you found most fun or fascinating now that you've been almost a year living in Sydney?
Fun. Okay. I think...
What do you enjoy the most about Sydney?
I love walking. I love the... Mm. They have footpaths everywhere. You can literally walk the entire state of city of Sydney and you'll be fine, because they have such good footpaths. So the general treks, walks that I do, I really enjoy it. You have, and the work-life balance is really good. Like, literally, you start at 8, at 4 o'clock, fuck off. Nobody is going to ask you a question. Nobody will bother you. Like, if my boss has to ask me anything, he'll say 5 sorries before he starts his conversation. So, they literally don't bother you once you're off work and stuff. So, the work-life balance is so good that I have time to walk, look out, you know. It's a very, very beautiful country. It has a lot of clean air and everything. That's all good. But... I still miss India a lot, and I'm not 100%, you know, convinced that I want to be here for good. So that's something that is, it's really difficult for me. And I feel like it's easier for you to move countries when you're younger, like when you're immediately after college. Like, I know Surbhi moved to London like in 2013, and immediately, like, she's been there for since then. I feel it's very easy.
Yeah.
It's not very easy. It's comparatively easier for you to adjust and, you know, settle in a country when you're young. But when you're settled and I had a set routine and everything, and then last year when I had to migrate, I was like, yaar, nahi ho raha mujhse. Even my sister, she moved this year to Canada, and she's like, I cannot do this. And it's easier. So it's very difficult to get used to the culture, language. Oh my God, the lingo. Half of the things that people say, I'm like, what? Like, words, they have this, they at least in Sydney or Australia, they have this thing, they shorten the word. So they are like, brekkie. I'm like, what? Like, breakfast, vegetarian or something. You won't believe, for afternoon, they say Arvo. And I was like, who the fuck is gonna know it's Arvo? You mean afternoon? Like, there is no correlation. Afternoon doesn't even have V. How the hell am I supposed to know you're saying afternoon? Like, you know what slippers? They call it thongs. And I'm like, someone's like,
oh, thongs.
Yeah, and I'm like, let's buy thongs. And I was like, why should I buy thongs? Like, it's like this. That is something that I'm still getting used to. I was like, yeah, what? Huh? Like, I really struggle with the lingo that they use here. That's it. I'm like, no, okay, take a Sikh lingo times. That's something that I'm still getting used to.
Yeah, I do agree. I think moving when you're older is just harder. I think either because you're also much more like set in your ways, right? You don't want to change that much. You're like, oh, I don't want to do it differently. Yeah. Singapore is a great place, but sometimes, yeah, I don't know how long I'll be here. But yeah, even the thought of, oh my God, if I have to move somewhere else, like, it only gets harder by the year.
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah.
For me, if
the
I'm
river of life will take you where it takes you.
Yeah, if I'm going to move out of Sydney, I'm going to go back to India. I'm not moving to any other country right now. I'm done. I'm mujhe nahi seekhna. I don't want to learn new words and everything.
And India, Delhi or Bombay?
Between, not Bombay, Delhi for sure. I don't have, my family moved out of Delhi, so I have nothing in Delhi anymore.
Okay.
So, my partner's family is in Mumbai. So, either Bombay or Bangalore. Hmm.
Okay, yeah. I agree.
I think
those two are
between those two
exciting places.
Yeah, yeah. I think those are the two places I feel I can find, firstly, work. My relevant field of media is specifically in Bombay, and Bangalore is just a nice place to be in, I guess.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the stuff you've been up to. So you started off working in PR. You got a master's in PR and corporate comms. And then you eventually went to work on at Tata Sky and Shimaru. Let's talk about that first. You said your first job wasn't like, you didn't really enjoy it that much. Can you explain to me, like, what does one person do when they say, I work in PR or corporate comms? Like, what do you do? And what are parts of the job like you enjoyed, and what are parts of the job like you're like, I don't like this too much?
The thing is, I mean, firstly, I did PR because I didn't know what to do. I was like, something related to communication or something I can do. History, though, the only reason I did history in the first place was because Stephenson mil gaya, not because I wanted to study history.
Yeah.
I wanted to study pol science, actually. And it's just that I got pol science in Ramjas and history in Stephens. Everyone was like, why? Between Stephens and Ramjas, there's no conversation.
Yeah.
These two history. I said, okay, fine. After that, I said, kuch karne ko nahi, comms kar liya. And then after that, when I started working in PR, I realized that it's a very, I don't know, it's a hard job. It's like convincing journalists that this product is good, this product is great. You're selling a story all the time. And at times you don't even believe in that item or that product, but you have to convince someone that, hey, you know what, this is a great product. And you also realize that half of the things that come in newspapers and everything is a PR story, because they are getting something, the journalists are getting something in back, you know, in return for your story.
Yeah.
So is it even real? So people say that PR is not advertising. PR is more genuine than advertising. But in the end, if you send me a gift basket and expect a story and I give you that story, how is it genuine? Right? So
yeah.
I genuinely did not understand that concept. And also I feel when you start in PR, you really have to do a lot of these boring operational tasks, which were like, oh my God, like I had to read newspaper every single day, and not just one, like 4 to 5, and scan and see ki mere brand ka naam aaya hai, so then I have to put it in an Excel. I have to see, acha, this newspaper is circulating in which all cities and states, and what is the population of that city, and say to, you know, find out the impressions and all of that thing. Oh my God, it was such a mind fucking task that I would do. And it's just it just got to me, and I was like, I cannot read so much newspaper. It was like one of those, like, I don't know, when you, in as kids, we used to have a game where, like, you like, acha, letter A, and then you have to find five words with the letter A, and that was a game that I used to play. It was like that, dude, pad ke brand ka naam aaya ki nahi, brand, bhai saab. It was mind fucking. So I was like, no, this is something that I cannot. It was a time consuming and thankless job. A lot of journalists are just rude to you at times, and they like, oh, yeah, you are just giving products, oh, your product is not good. I said, oh my God, I cannot. You have to literally call each and every journalist every single day and be like, achha, ye product hai, isko review karoge, achha, ye hai, ye karoge, will you do this, will you do this? I was like, no, I cannot do this. And that's when I was like, this is not my cup of tea. Even though I'm in sales right now, but I don't think it is as bad as what PR used to be. Oof. Or at least then it used to be. I guess once you understand the overall concepts, you do better things with PR. I do see a value in PR in general, but the initial years is a struggle. I feel it's quite a time consuming operational work, which I didn't enjoy. And then it just so happened someone was looking for a product person and basic executive product role, and I was like, please mujhe refer kar do, main kuch bhi karne ko taiyar hu, yahan se nikalo types. And the thing is, if I quit my job without a job in hand, I have to go back to Delhi. That was the other thing. I was like, nahi, mujhe kuch bhi, koi bhi naukri dila do, mere ko bas Delhi nahi jana wapas type. So then,
but why couldn't you just hang around in Bombay?
Because who's gonna pay rent?
It's expensive.
Of course. My parents are not going to be, achha, theek hai, you have no job, you still want to chill in Bombay, theek hai, ye lo paise. No, my parents were not, firstly, they didn't have that money to put on me like that. Yeah. But at the same time, I was like, no, it's not fair for them as well.
Of course.
So I was like, no, I need a job before I quit. And that's when I ended up in Tata Sky. It was a product role. It was quite interesting. That was something that I learned a lot about media, what happens in product, and it was so. Yeah. I used to manage product services for Tata Sky that were only available in Tata Sky. So we used to develop, create UI design, everything for the product. So it was like a product owner role. And I've been there for 2.5 years or something. So there was a massive learning, and it was such a rewarding job because, you know, when you go back home and you open Tata Sky, it's like, oh, ye maine kiya tha. Yeah. Oh, ye jo design hai, I selected it. There's a reason why the catalog has this product. I used to enjoy that a lot, dude. It was a great role. And it wasn't just a single thing that you used to do. You used to do multiple things. Research, customer acquisition, everything. So it was a very in-depth, good role. And it was a media role. So I really enjoyed that role.
Nice. So for people who are not familiar with what Tata Sky is, Tata Sky is, how do you describe a Tata Sky?
What is
the official definition?
It's a cable DTH service provider. So they do
DTH, broadcast. Direct to home, correct.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a direct to home service. Basically, you get a small box and you get, you know, like TV, and you have a bunch of channels. I remember when we got Tata Sky, there were a few things which were just revolutionary in my opinion at that point of time.
Yeah.
Number one, you could see the schedule of your shows.
Oh.
So rather than opening up the newspaper, you could be like, oh, I know when this show is coming.
It's the second EPG.
Game, EPG, what does EPG stand for?
Electronic Programming Guide.
Oh, okay, man, the EPG was game-changing because I could be like, what movie is coming 3 weeks from now? Yeah. Oh, you know, that movie is coming, and amazing. But the second thing which changed the game, I remember, from Tata Sky, it was we upgraded from like a normal shitty-looking box to a black box, and that could allow you to record your show. So you would not miss a show or you wouldn't miss a movie. And then, of course, you could fast forward. Like, you know, you can fast forward the ads and all that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Now looking at where OTT has reached and what, like, this is not even like 50 years ago. This is like maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Tata Sky was a game changer.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to know, how big is Tata Sky today? Do people still use Tata Sky?
Yeah.
Or like, has that disappeared?
So that's the thing, that that's the thing. When I moved to OTT, a lot of people were saying that there's going to be cord cutting. Cord cutting basically means people are going to stop the DTH services, cable services, and move to OTT platforms. A lot of people were like, this is going to happen. You know, everyone's going to go out of business, blah, blah, blah. But surprisingly, because India's population is so huge, the adoption of OTT is still quite low. So they still have a great business. And what Tata Sky, which is now Tata Play, they've managed to do is they have managed to integrate these OTT services within their services. So what if in today's day and age, when you buy a Tata Sky ka whatever monthly recharge or something, you also have an option to add on these OTT service to them, to the monthly recharge, and just it becomes as part of another part of your TV, right? So a lot of people still like watching TV, live TV and everything. But at the same time, because it is now part of, tum achha 500 rupees waise de rahe ho Tata Sky ka, achha theek hai 300 rupees aur deke you get other OTT also. It's still one person is taking that money. You don't have to, you know, recharge each and every, you know, service and blah, blah, blah. So they've managed to do that pretty well. And I think that's something that they do here in Sydney as well.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So I don't think Tata Sky immediately jumped onto the OTT, you know, wagon, and it
got it.
It instead of being redundant, they made it part of their own services so that their services don't get hampered. So I think they're still quite relevant.
Do you still need to install a dish if you get a Tata Sky even today?
I think so.
Or does it like run on Wi-Fi? I mean, it should run on Wi-Fi, no?
I don't know whether they still... I think if you still have linear channels and everything, you still need the dish.
Oh, okay.
But otherwise, if you are just on the OTT pack or something, I don't think you need... I don't know. I mean, it's been a while since I left Tata Sky, so I don't know how that works. But
Okay.
And also in villages...
I don't know anybody else who worked at Tata Sky, so...
I still know people in Tata Sky. I can give you their number. You ask them.
You know what? Since I was talking about the dish, because you know the dish seems a very an inconvenient thing. Like I live in an apartment. Like imagine everybody was installing dishes. Like ridiculous.
Yeah.
However, and I'm not sure if you've seen this thing called Starlink, which basically gives you internet directly.
Isn't that right?
I mean, if Tata Sky started offering you Wi-Fi on that same dish,
but they do. Tata Sky has now expanded to Wi-Fi as well.
Oh my god!
Yeah. I don't know how how does that add to the dish and everything, that I don't know how it works. But they have expanded the business to something called Tata Sky Broadband, which I know is in Bombay for sure. I don't know about other cities.
Wow, fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was your journey at Tata Sky. You spent about 2.5 years there. After Tata Sky, you decided you wanted to do an MBA, and you took a break. But you did not end up doing an MBA. How come? Why did you not do your MBA right after Tata Sky?
Yeah, I tried. It's not like I didn't want to do. I tried. I failed miserably, dude. Okay. I don't know how people do GMAT. I haven't.
I tried too.
I was like, if anyone has been able to get a good score in GMAT, that person is a genius. That's it. I don't know how. I really think my math skills are so poor that if you ask me to do 1 + 1, I really need to do physically. I need to take a calculator out. It's that bad. So for me, I tried. I was like, because that's what I've heard, right? Achha, tumne pad liya, graduation kar liya, you've done 2 to 3 years of working. Next step is natural progression is to do a master's. And my sister did her MBA around that time. So my parents were like, theek hai, tum bhi kar lo. If it might just add value, blah, blah. I said, okay, fine, let me try it out. And also at that point, I wasn't sure whether, you know, Tata Sky had a future for me, stuff like that. I had like existential crisis and crap that, you know, young people have, or at least I was going through some random crap in my head and overthinking all the situation, like, aise kaise bol diya times. So that's why I was like, okay, fine, you know what, let me try and do my MBA, which I failed miserably. And I was like, nahi, nahi, mujhse nahi ho raha. And I had to go back to Delhi. Like I said, if I don't have a job in Bombay, there was no way I could have survived in Bombay, because in Bombay, whatever salary was coming to me was going for rent and everyday things. So I had no savings for even to survive a day in Bombay for rent. So I had to go back to Delhi, and after 3, 4 or 5 months with my parents, I was like, bus. I it is clear I can't clear my MBA. Chalo, let's go back to Bombay and just get out of Delhi. And that's how I ended up in Shimaru, because I used to work, Shimaru used to be a partner for Tata Sky when I was at Tata Sky. So they knew me. They'd seen my work. So it wasn't that difficult for me to get into Shimaru because they've seen my work and they knew who I was. So they said, okay, this is the role. I wanted a product role there. But, you know, when they said, you know what, we have a sales role. Why don't you try it? I said, okay, beggars can't be choosers type. So I said, okay.
Yeah.
So they gave me a brand solution role for the content that they have on YouTube. So they have a really big YouTube, base for content, for music and everything. So they wanted to get brands on board for existing content. So it was something that they were also trying out new. Ki jo purane gaane, can they re-upload these songs with some branding and everything? Mm. Of course, nobody wanted to do that. That business didn't go anywhere. And that's when I was like, okay, I don't see myself in Shimaru. And like you said, Shimaru is an old company. They still have their old ways of doing things, which was way different from Tata Sky. I was like, boss, ye nahi ho sakta. Like, they are very hierarchy driven. They are like, nahi, this has to be approved. There is like, if boss says no for whatever reason, that's it. There is no counter argument, or data will not be like, I'm showing you the numbers that this will not work. No, it has to be done because that's what has said. So I was like, no, I can't do this. And that, at that time, Z was hiring, and I knew someone in Z who was working at that time. And they said, you know what, I'll give you a reference. Come join the team. I interviewed and I got in. And I was like, oh, chalo, Shimaru Cinema. Because, I mean, they have good content and everything, but they still are set in their old ways of doing things. So even, I'm not kidding you.
If I can pause you there, tell me about, like, I'm actually quite curious to know. Shimaru, I think, was a very relevant company. Maybe, 20 years ago.
Mm.
What are they thinking? Like, I'm sure the owner of Shimaru is like, we're not relevant today anymore. Mm. I don't know if they believe that or not. But in my opinion, I think they're not very relevant. But they are sitting on this big bank of, very valuable content. What are they trying to do? Like, from your time there, what are they trying to do? Like, what is like the 10-year or like a 50-year plan for Shimaru?
I have no idea what is a 50-year plan. I'll be surprised if they survive another 50 years. But you're right. They have a large, depository of content which they need to utilize. So what they started doing was, they're like, "Acha, hamare paas ye content hai." And they do really good regional content and religious content. So when I was there, they played a lot on that. What they did was, they tied up with all of these DTH service providers. So at that time, when OTT wasn't a thing, DTH service providers were trying to do, how do I differentiate myself from the competitor, right? Airtel also provided the same channels. Tata Sky also provided the same channels. How do I make myself different? Is to give value-add services. That's what Tata Sky started doing. And that's what Airtel also started doing. That, we have Airtel Dance or Tata Sky Music, Tata Sky Studio, anything, which was only available in Tata Sky. Now, if it's a video content related value add, you need a content provider. And that's what Shimaru came into place.
Yeah.
Like, Tata Sky has a channel called Tata Sky Prayers or Tata Sky some Aradhana or something for
Hindi. Darshan.
Darshan and stuff like that, right? So Shimaru jumped on that. Shimaru started creating a lot of these content, a lot of religious content. There's something called Tata Sky Gujarati or something, which comes with Gujarati music, movie, everything. Shimaru started powering that content. Wow. So they started getting into this business of creating new content for these, DTH service providers. But having said that, apart from that, now when they saw that OTT is happening, they came up with Shimaru OTT. But the problem with that is it's called Shimaru Me or something. The problem with that is the content that they have uploaded there is available on all other platforms because they've already, it's on YouTube also and on other platforms like your other OTT platforms, and it's already overutilized content. So why would anyone pay for an OTT service where I have content available, same content, Jab Vi Met is available on Netflix also, Jab Vi Met is available on Shimaru also, why should I pay for you? So there wasn't any exclusivity. So they tried, they are still in that, in trying to figure that out, but I really don't know what is the future that they're trying to do. They tried doing, they do a lot of kids content also. They do a lot of everything for YouTube, but I have no idea what they're planning to do next.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah. How big is Shimaru? How many people work at Shimaru roughly? Do you know?
I don't know, 100, 150, 200 something. They have a lot of people who, because in the end they have a studio, right? They need people, editors and all of these guys to sit and do work. They have so many, they have, I think, almost 99 or 100 YouTube channels. You need someone to sit, do QC, upload content, you know, check everything. They have the YouTube business there is really good. So they have a good, I think, 100, 150 people around. So, but again,
150 is very small for how big Shimaru is.
Oh, then maybe I'm wrong.
I would imagine it to be like, I don't know. Anyway, yeah. my guess would be it's like 5,000-6,000 people who work at Shimaru.
But maybe it's much smaller. No, that's too much. No? I don't think so. Yeah, I'll have to Google.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out. Mm. Okay, so that was your time at Shimaru. Interesting. And that's how you slowly start getting into the world of OTT.
Yeah.
What I've heard about India is that there are just too many OTT channels right now. So what do you think? Given you spent like a few years working in OTT, where do you see OTT is going to be in like 5 years? Do you think there's going to be like, what are your predictions for OTT? I'm curious.
My prediction is that this is one player which will buy all the OTTs that are there, and they're going to be very, even though right now there are so many smaller players and smaller OTT companies that have come up, my prediction is probably another 5-10 years they're going to buy out these smaller ones, and then they're going to be probably 2-3, which is your Netflix and your Amazon and your Jio. That's it. Probably 4-5. It'll come down. The rapid expansion, but it's not at all easy. It's a very, very expensive technology. It is very expensive to create content and everything. Not everyone will be able to survive. And Jio's been buying other platforms. Sony is looking to sell. Zee was looking to sell. Sony bought it. Now Sony was like, you know what? Now we need to sell our business. They are in talks again to sell. So it is a very expensive business to survive. If your bigger players are looking at selling and everything, the smaller players will not survive. Disney got Fox on board, or they sold it to, it became Disney Plus Hotstar. But then once IPL is out, now Disney is struggling. So it is a very, very expensive to get that customer. Firstly, okay, fine. If it's an AVOD business, which is advertising-led business, then it's fine. You will still be able to get people. But creating content is so bloody expensive. Now, the only differentiator is there are a lot of regional players that are coming up, like your Sun and AHA, which is in Telugu and stuff like that. But it is, again, your bigger players will either buy these smaller players out. That's what my assumption is. Probably another 10 years, it's going to come back to probably 5 players.
Got it. Yeah. And in the OTT like world, what is the most important thing? What is the most valuable asset? Is it the content? Is it your reach? Is it how easy it is for people to use? Is it your technology? What can make or break? Or what have you seen the good OTT players do? What is like the most valuable thing?
It's content. Hands down.
So whoever has the content, that wins.
Yes. Whoever has a content, they definitely win. And then second would be user experience. Like if your user experience is fucked, it is very difficult to retain that customer. It's like, when I was at Zee, we had just launched, I think it was 1 year old. The OTT platform was just 1 year old and they were still figuring out a lot of things. My God, every single day there were so many complaints. Ye yaha pe nahi chal raha, TV pe ye problem hai, waha pe ye problem hai. And that's the thing, right? you can't just focus on experience on your mobile, right? It has to be, it is multi platform product, right?
Yeah.
It has to work well on your laptop. It has to work well on your phone. It has to work well on your TV. And, you know, if Ruben is playing content, doesn't mean Linda will not be able to play content, right? All of that aspect,
yeah,
you really have to get it right. And the thing is, Netflix, the product was so good, is so good, not was, but it's still so good. The UI experience is so good that it's very difficult to compete with them. But at the same time, the only way you can compete is produce content that people want to watch, right? In the end, Zee and all, they are very good at creating Hindi content, and that's where they have the benefit. And they have a benefit because they have broadcast content, right? Because in the end, your Saas Bahu serials work, your Big Boss works, they want to watch that content, right? And people will come and watch that content because people still enjoy watching that content. The amount of people who still watch Roadies is phenomenal. Like at Wood, at Wood, we used to create original content, which was only for Wood. But at the same time, when your Roadies is on, your Big Boss is on, your Splitsvilla is on, the number of, you know, viewership we had was amazing. So that is something that nobody else can replicate. And that's the thing. I was on Netflix, there's this show called, I think, Love is Blind or Too Hot to Handle, one of these shows.
Oh, there are so many of them.
Yeah.
Singles Inferno, Love is Blind.
Yeah.
This is all the same shit.
Yeah.
Repackaged or something.
I was like, you know what? MTV Splitsvilla was, they did that long time. Yeah, they're the OGs, right? And I was like, they cracked this, you know, reality TV thing much before Netflix. And of course, now all of these shows are really picked up on Netflix as well. But MTV did it really well. And it still works. Like, people still watch Roadies. It's a big thing. Hey, Roadies, I was like, yeah. So I think content is something that people still look for. Even if the UI experience, everything, you know, might not be as superior as other platforms, people really go after content. Even Big Boss, my God, what all experience we have. When Big Boss came to, when Big Boss is live on Voot, now Jio, we used to have a 24-hour live stream. So on that stream, there's nothing. There is people in the Big Boss house or walking around, and you can just watch it. So it's not like there is people watch that also. I was like, why would you watch 24 hours of streaming of some random, like a group of celebrities just walking around, roti bel rahe, jhadu kar rahe, pocha kar rahe. They want to watch that also. Like 20...
Why do you think people watch it?
I think it's, I watch reality show myself. And the reason why I watch it is I feel good about myself. I'm like, oh my God, thank God I'm not such a loser. So I feel good about myself. So, but I feel it's like a... They see celebrities and they feel like, achha, ye bhi to matlab normal insaan hai. They also eat food. They also have to do their own stuff. They also have their own, you know, personal problems. Achha, paise ki problem hoti inko ye. So I think they are able to, it's more of a, you know, I can connect with celebrities that I, you know, they, because it's so glamorized. Like, these celebrities are so glamorized that you feel they're out of this world. But when you see them do your daily stuff, you're like, achha, theek hai. So I think that's what my assumption is. That's why a lot of people watch it. And also everyone loves a little bit of gossip and fight and drama. Yes.
I guess I could relate to them at some level that, oh yeah, they're also doing the dishes.
Yeah.
I also have to do the dishes. Since content is so important in whatever you've seen at... Zee and Viacom, what kind of content, what is your like bet, what if you had to go make content tomorrow, or if you had to say put in $1 million to create some kind of content, what kind of content would you create which would work, or which would be like lapped up by these OTT players? Or maybe you could answer that, or you could answer what content you would absolutely not make, because that's just like doomed to fail.
I think doomed to fail is definitely romance type of movie. People don't want to watch anything romantic anymore. I mean, people don't mind watching it, but people are just exhausted watching those romantic. I think all of the genres like thriller, drama, all of that have added so much to, especially these crime thrillers that have come up in Z and Voot and, you know, other platforms. Everyone wants to watch that, you know, heavy hitting stuff instead of your normal acha ladka ladki se mile pyar hua shaadi hua types. No, I think people are tired of that. But I mean, that's the thing, that you can't put your, it is a hit and miss every single time. You don't know what works, what doesn't work. There are so many shows which were a surprise for a lot of people that, oh, okay, this worked. That is surprising. But, you know, content.
Is there an example?
Like all of the movies, dude, which was that one movie where, I'm forgetting the name, but there was a movie where I think Prime or someone paid like a bomb to get the rights. Oh, it was an A-lister movie. I'm completely forgetting the name, but they paid a bomb to get that movie on Prime. It nobody watched. Everyone was like, "Ye kachra kisko dekhna types." Even like big stars like Kalank, it was supposed to be a hit, but nobody gave a shit. So it really does. Like people are that thing that if there is an A-lister in the movie, it will work well. It has gone. People don't care if there is an A-lister or a, you know, a normal person who can actually act. So it is really unpredictable. According to me, there is no single recipe that works for, you know, your platform. You have to give people the chance, and it just changes. And with regional coming into play, the Malayalam movie has suddenly become like a thing. Like they've come up with such phenomenal content. And that's the thing, right? Sometimes regional is where you have to bet money on. It's not about the content, it's about the language. Like at Viacom, we were extensively focusing on regional content because that's where the next set of people will come from, because Hindi and English is done to death. So it at times it's just not about the content, it's about the language that you're focusing on. So
wow, yeah, I can imagine. India is also such a fascinating place where you could do so much in regional. Like, there are so many different languages that you could... that's one thing I like about Netflix. I think now living, whatever, in maybe Southeast Asia, I like, a lot of people watch Korean. Like, Korean drama is very, very big.
Yeah.
And then you get into it, right? And now with subtitles, you can get it.
Yeah.
But you know, I think this pandemic, when I, on Netflix, I had pretty much watched all the English stuff. So I started watching, you know, German and Chinese and Korean. They're actually pretty damn good. Like... Yeah. Some of the shows and some of the dramas are, it's like, wow. Like, and imagine, like, if you start watching, I know, like, a lot of friends, they'll watch Korean drama, and then you just have this massive universe of Korean content that you can now consume. It's not like, you know, it's, you know, like, when I think of Malayalam or, like, South Indian movies, you have this Rajinikanth kind of, you know,
image,
stereotype that is just like, oh my God. Correct, like some ridiculous stuff, but some of the movies are actually, like pretty good. And now with like translation language, you know, anybody can consume that content.
And I feel the one thing about Malayalam movie fascinating. That is really, that worked with me, or I just really enjoy, is they're so natural. It's like, acha mere ghar pe bhi aise ho sakta hai. It's like the actors, everyone, they look like us. I feel like they are not overtly glamorized. They don't have straight hair all the time. They don't wear saris and sleep. They wake up without makeup. They go to bed without makeup. It's so natural. Like, of course, there are some aspects of it which are glamorized, but at least the main, most of the storyline is as natural as the story would get. That is something that I really, really enjoy about Malayalam movies. Like, if there's a Malayalam movie, my husband and I, like, we have to watch it. Even if it's, at times, it's just, some of them, of course, are shit, but we really enjoy watching Malayalam content, and which I didn't know. Like, I always was like, oh, when someone was like, oh, are you a Malayali? I'm like, no, I'm from Delhi. I would instantly say, because that was my pride to be from Delhi. But I think, you know, once you move away, I think that's the thing that, no, I am from Kerala. You know, I'm born and raised in Delhi, but I am a Malayali. So that's something that, you know, I discovered over time that, you know what, I am happy where I am.
Is this a feature of you moving to Sydney, or did you start saying that even when you were in Bombay?
Maybe Sydney. I don't. I also, because last when pandemic happened, I moved to Kerala. I was there with my parents for 1.5 years or something like that. So at that time, when I was in Kerala, I was like, oh yeah, dude, it's such a nice place. I had never stayed in Kerala as such. We used to go there for vacations when we were kids. But once I stayed there, I loved the food. I was like, dude, I didn't know I liked Kerala food so much. I make so much South Indian food at home even now. My husband also enjoys it. So I think once I moved there, that's when I realized that, yeah, I really like, you know, Kerala. I really like Malayali food. With Sydney, it has accelerated, yes. But I don't think it was, it happened when I moved to Sydney. I think it happened when I moved to Kerala.
So now when you think of home, is it Delhi or is it Kerala?
Home is India. Mujhe India mein kahin pe bhi bhej do, main home bana lungi wahan pe. But yeah, right now home is Kerala because that's where my parents live. And that's where the last place when I moved to Sydney was in Kerala. And the last, you know, my bedroom that I set was in Kerala. So it is Kerala. Delhi used to be home, but not anymore.
Interesting. Yeah, I find it quite fascinating for people who are like, you know, ethnically from a place, they grow up in another place, but then there is like, you know, your parents shift out of that place. So even similar for me, I would say I'm originally from Goa, like culturally, but I've never grown up in Goa. Like I grew up in Faridabad, but now there's nobody in Faridabad. So sometimes I'm like what is home for me? Like, is it Goa? Like after my, like, you know, eventually when, say, you know, in 20, 30, 40 years when, you know, my parents and, you know, have whatever moved on, then there's nothing for me in Goa either, right? So it's like, you know, what is home? Anyway, okay. Yeah. Okay.
For me, I think,
sorry, there's a bit of a lag, but, you were saying something.
Yeah. No, I was saying the same thing that, once my parents move on, is there anything left for me in India or Kerala, right? That's why I think when I was in Kerala, I made an effort to speak to my aunts and uncles whom I have not interacted as such when I was in Delhi, because of course there was a language barrier. I can speak Malayalam, but it's a very funny Malayalam that, you know, people hear and laugh. But I made an effort to talk to them because I was like, you know, they are family, and that's something that I've tried, but of course I've not been able to keep up. Once I moved to Sydney, the time difference really gets to you. But I also think about it that once my parents move, what will happen?
Hopefully a question for the far future. But a question, an inevitable question, which we will have to address. That we talked a lot about Viacom and OTT. I want to talk a little bit about NBA. You moved to Australia to mainly with the objective of being closer to your partner.
Yes.
You started doing an MBA, and in your voice notes, you told me that you just do not enjoy it. Or you will try your best to finish it this year, and you hopefully. What do you not like about the MBA?
Dude, firstly, I picked up an MBA, like you said, to be closer to my partners. I picked up whatever that was easily available, whatever that was starting as soon as possible, and whatever that was cheapest. Because, of course, I realized that after working 8 to 10 years, I realized what I was doing at, you know, which was BD and sales, it doesn't require an MBA. It just requires you to be sensible. That's it. Of course, theories and all help, but you already are doing all of that. You might not know the name of the theory, but you are already doing it. So I realized that MBA se mujhe to, matlab, at least at that point, I don't think it's adding any value to my life. So that was my agenda when I took up that MBA. So I think keeping all of that in mind, I think it's just, firstly, I think the quality of education that we are used to is very different from the quality of education that's here. At least that's what I feel, or at least in this university, that's what I'm experiencing. And because Australia was so strict with the pandemic, it's still not as open. Now, I mean, so the number of people that are in my class are what, 5 kids, that's it. They're like 5 kids in my class. And most of those kids are immediately after college, they are coming to MBA. So they really don't understand a lot of things. So the experience itself is quite difficult for me, because at times you want to engage with someone who understands, you know, a little bit of business or how business works. So the conversations that we have in class, it's like the teacher is speaking and these kids are listening, because there's no engagement happening because they have nothing to share. I mean, I'm not saying it's their fault or anything, but that's how it is. That's why I feel like all MBA colleges should say that, you know, at least you need to have 3 years of minimum work experience to have some basic understanding of how business works. So my MBA is going horrible. I've put it on hold because I'm busy doing other things. So hopefully next year I'll pick it up again and try to finish it. My parents are like, you have 5 months to go, just finish it. But I'm like, I really don't want to spend like my time there because I'm not getting anything out of it. So it's quite bad. I don't know. I know there are other colleges in Sydney, Australia, which are really good. But at least the one that I'm in, I'll be like, never.
Okay, so you put that on hold. So what is keeping you busy these days? I know you work at Pullman. Is that what takes most of your time, or are you doing other stuff too?
No, I'm not doing other stuff. I work with Pullman. I work actually 4 days a week. So one day I'm just relaxing, and I'm so happy about it. I'm like, if I have to go back to 5 days of working, I don't know how I'll survive.
But this is over and above the Saturday and Sunday, yeah?
It is. I work, some days I work 3 days, some days I work 4 days. But that one extra day of holiday is really, I mean, the thing is, I started like that because I was doing uni. So when I was doing uni, I needed that one day to finish class or assessment, whatever that was. So that's the reason I started part-time with Pullman. But now that I've put it on hold, they're like, okay, if you want to do 4 days, you do 4 days. If you want to do 5 days, you do 5 days. I said, no, I'll do only 4 days. Fifth day is holiday for me anyway. But yes, now the fifth day is getting consumed for wedding planning, because planning a wedding when you're in Australia and when the wedding is in India is really difficult. There is a lot of logistics involved, a lot of vision that we are trying to, you know, put in place, which is very difficult. Also, we are doing it in Kerala, which is again, language is a problem, because my partner and I, our Malayalam is not fluent as the vendors and everything. So that makes it a little difficult process to manage. But yes, apart from that, I mean, most of my time goes to Pullman. But like I said, work-life balance is so good here that I start at 8 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, I'm done and I run home. That's it. And then, of course, there is a lot of ghar ka kaam. Kya, khana banao, bartan dho, ye karo, wo karo. All of that takes time, dude. I don't think I realized that, you know, when I was in India, because you had help at home, or, you know, someone is coming to do the cooking, someone's doing the cleaning. You don't realize you have that time. But the thing is, that time was getting consumed at work, because in India, if I start my day at 8 o'clock, I would not shut at 4, I'll shut at 6. So that 2 extra hours that I get here, which I'm now using for cooking and cleaning, that would go in at work, right? So I think that is, I'm not happy about that. But yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah. Okay, I think there was a bit of a lag. I don't know why the internet just goes in and out. Anyway, I think the recording, the post, it should be quite clean. Okay, so your 4 days a week, fifth day is planning the wedding. And then, of course, Saturday, Sunday is just to, like, of course, relax, because it's planning the wedding and working a job is like 2 full-time jobs. it's a lot of hard work. For the wedding, do you guys have a date? What is a big day?
It's on 25th of November. We're getting married in Kerala. And I have a few of my Stephen's friends coming, so I'm very excited to meet them. It's been a while since I've met any of those guys, because, you know, it was pandemic, nobody was in, you know, people moved out of Bombay, people moved out of Delhi and everything. So I have I'm going to meet 4 or 5 of them, they've been invited and they're all coming. Or at least 4 of them have booked the ticket. The one person who's not booked the ticket knows who that person is. I'm not going to name shame you, but you better book your ticket.
Well, I think this podcast will come out before the 25th of November. So, well, if you're listening and if you haven't booked the ticket already, oh my God, like you're horrible. Okay. As we wrap up, I usually ask people their shift in belief, but this time we started the conversation with the shifts of belief. So that is cool. There's a new question I'm experimenting with, so maybe you're the first one to get it. What is one investment you made which is very proud of, which you're very proud of? And by investment, I don't mean like a financial product or anything. It's just like money spent on a highly material thing, which you're just like, which was like a great investment. It was money really well spent.
Wow. I wasn't prepared for this question, Roman.
You're not supposed to be prepared for questions.
Money that I've really spent, that I really enjoyed. I think the
like money that you've spent and you're like, this was such good money spent.
The thing is, I don't spend money on myself. It takes a lot for me to spend money on myself. I am happy to spend money on everyone else except for me. For me, the process of spending money is like, oh no, ye calculate karo, wo karo, rent dena, ye dena, wo dena. It's a very difficult process. But at the same time, I think general, I think this year beginning, my partner and I, we went to New Zealand. I think I have never traveled in my life. Okay, that's one thing that I literally spent, 18-20 years of my life in Delhi. Then I've spent 10 years of my life in Bombay and I have not traveled. The only place, I've been to Delhi, Kerala, Mumbai, and that's about it. I've been to Goa twice, but for work, not to travel around. I have not traveled at all in my life. I think I'm slowly, because everything, every time I decide, oh, let me travel, let me do this, I'm like, oh no, it's so expensive, oh no, for me, bas iske liye paise nahi. I've always thought so much about it, but I think this year, once I moved to Sydney, I've traveled a little, I've got an opportunity to go to New Zealand, looked around New Zealand for a week. I've gone to Bali. Last week I was in Bali. So I think that's something that I'm discovering, that is an investment. That's not an expense. Like, you know, spending that money is, and that's why when I saw Anya's podcast, coming back to where we started, that is where I was like, dude, I really want to learn from her how, because it takes a lot for me to spend money. And that's why I was like, oh, dude, I also want to, travel is something that I want to do, but I've never had the guts to spend that money on traveling. I would always get scared. So I think that's an investment that I'm slowly learning to do, and slowly and gradually, I'm like, you know what, money will come, but experiences are much more difficult to come. And I feel the older you get, you will get tired, you won't be able to walk all the way to Mount Everest and everything. So I'm like, no, I need to do traveling. So I think that's where my focus is right now, and I'm going to invest more and more.
Okay, that's awesome. Bali, I was just going to say, since you're in Australia, Bali is literally hop, skip and jump. Another place which is apparently very close by is Papua New Guinea. I know a few friends of mine who work there, they travel to work there, and they were like, I don't know how touristy it is, but apparently it is a place to visit. And I think it's maybe like 2-3 hours from Australia.
Yeah, correct. That's why when we decided New Zealand, I was like, bhai, New Zealand, Australia, aake New Zealand nahi gayi na main. Matlab, I'm going to be ashamed forever. So I was like, nahi, we have to do New Zealand. And even Fiji is really close by. There are other islands like Tonga and all of these small islands which are nearby, near Australia, which even Singapore, dude. It's Singapore, Bali, Thailand, Bangkok, all of this is so close. When I come to Singapore, I'll definitely call you.
If you're planning Singapore, please tell me.
Yeah.
It is a great place. And you know, 3-4 days is good enough.
Yeah.
Beyond that, maybe not that much. But it's a good place. You know, when you're maybe stop by Singapore for like 4-5 days, and then you maybe go on to like Bangkok or go on to even Vietnam. Like, amazing.
Oh yeah.
But okay, awesome. That's nice that you're traveling more. Okay, two pieces of advice you have for your 19 or 18 year old self.
Oh, I would say that just don't be scared and be confident. I think that's something that I wasn't confident when I was younger, and I would be like, you know what, there is nothing called, you know, there's no set right things. Okay, you I think that's something I learned much later in life is you ask questions, you know, you make mistakes. Doesn't matter, because if you don't, you'll never learn. I think that's something that I would tell my younger self is it's okay. You say whatever you want to say, be confident, don't be scared, don't give others the power to make you feel, you know, inferior, right? That's all in your head. I feel like that insecurity or something, it just, you, it's all in your head. It's not, someone else is not trying to do it. It's just that in your head, you're building someone else so bigger, larger than yourself, that you feel small. So I feel like I wish I'll just tell my younger self to be more confident, be more open, and just, you know, say whatever you want to say.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So that's one piece of advice. Is there something else you would tell your younger self?
Probably read more. I really think that I wish I had taken up reading when I was young. Or even now, I still, it's a struggle for me to read. It takes me like, when, and it's so funny, okay? It's like when a friend is sharing a post on, you know, on the phone, and someone's passing the phone around, and other friends are like, they've read and they passed on and they're laughing. And I'm still like, okay. Oh, I take so long to read. Oh my God. So I wish I would tell myself, you try and take up the habit of reading. It goes a long way.
On reading, I think I also would never read much when I was growing up. I think only very recently, and I would say maybe in the last four or five years, have I started to enjoy reading, and I love to read now. For me, what has helped a lot is two things. Number one, and this is, you know, some quote, read what you love and then you will love to read. So find something which you really enjoy reading. And then you'll have to go through a lot of stuff to find, like, either it's a genre, it's an author, it's a topic that you will really enjoy. Until you don't find that, it's very hard to enjoy reading. So read something you love, and then you will love to read. And secondly is, when you find a book boring, don't continue. Just stop it. I think there is this thing that you have to finish the book. Like, you will not start a new book unless you have finished it. But, like, just stop. Like, if the book doesn't grip you, you know, think about it. If you can read one book a week, which is crazy, fuck that. Say one book a month. You can read 12 books a year. And say even if you live 100 years, you can only read 120 books in your lifetime. Why would you waste time on some random rubbish book? There are easily, you know, 120 books which are amazing, you know, guaranteed amazing books. So if a book doesn't grip you, move on to the next one. I think those things have helped me read more. I love reading. Like, surprisingly, I really like reading history now. I never even sort of knew that, but that has helped me.
I feel if I had learned how to read much sooner, I would have, you know, enjoyed studying history for 3 years. Like, if when I tell people I did history as graduation, they're like, oh, tell us this. And I was like, oh my God, please don't ask me any question. I don't remember jack shit. Like, I literally do not remember anything I studied for 3 years. It's purely because I did not enjoy reading. So I would be just like, acha, okay, for the sake of reading, I'm reading. So I think I wish I did learn how to read. But yeah, I'm currently reading a book, and it's been like about 2 weeks, and I've read like some 30 pages only. But my aim is to finish this book, because like you said, it's not a boring book. I don't know whether I like it yet, but at least I don't hate it. So I am going to try and finish this one.
Okay, awesome. That was all my questions. So as always, Linda, you get to ask me one question after all the quizzing I've done for you.
One question. I think people keep asking you why you do this, and I think I fairly understand why you do this. And then my question for you was, I was going to ask you was, how do you see yourself continuing with this? Which I think you already answered, saying that you're looking at doing that group thingy or something like that. So I think that is also answered. But if I have to ask you a question, what is that one advice that you will give your younger self?
Oh, God. You know, at some point, I think episode 100 is going to be somebody interviewing me, because I think it'll be quite cool. But let's see if something else, I have a bad idea for episode 100. We are about 60% through. Anyway, What advice would I have for my younger self? You know what? I'm really surprised nobody has asked me this question before. It's such an obvious question. I ask everybody on every episode, and I would have imagined somebody asked me in one episode. So very interesting that you brought it up. Let me think. Yeah.
Now you know how we feel.
Yeah. I think one piece of advice I would have is pay more attention to health. I think, in health, I mean both, like, three versions of health. I think number one, your mind, your body, of course, like, you know, physical, and of course, like, a lot of, like, stuff you put inside your body.
Mm-hmm.
When I look back at, like, my 20s, the amount of abuse I have put my body through, it is a joke. Like, 3 years of college eating Maggie after Maggie, and like rice and rice and rice and carbs and like zero protein, no exercise, like nothing for the mind. I'm just like, and now you're sort of trying to undo a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
So yes, I wish, like, the advice I would have is, you know, pay more attention to your health. Eventually, you know, you focus on money, you focus on this, on all of these things. When you're 50, you know, it is your health which is going to be the problem. Correct. Or the thing which pulls you back, not the amount of money you have, not the amount of people you know.
And
time and your health, right?
And the thing is, I think a lot of people still take care of their physical health, but that mental health, I think a lot of people are still struggling to take care of it. Like, even if you don't have a problem in life or you're not depressed, you don't have to go through, you know, therapy and those, you know, sessions or meditation because you're, you know, down with depression or anything. I think that general concept of taking care of health on a mental health on a regular basis doesn't have to be because you are going through something. It should be part of your daily hygiene, I feel.
Yeah, exactly. It's like having a bath. Yeah. Like, you have a bath to keep your body clean, right? It's like just mental, like, you meditate or you pay attention to it so that you don't have to go to the doctor. Mm. Like, health is not going to a doctor. Health is just, like, I don't know, stuff you do every day, right? Yeah. It's like hygiene.
Correct.
I did not sort of view it that way. Now I think it's much different. But yes, I wish I had done a bit more of it in 20s. And not even more. Like, maybe if we just had that some level of awareness, so I would have put myself through less of the abuse that I have done. Like, college is like 3 years of Maggie. Oh my fucking God. Like, I can, my... 10 years later, my body's like, fuck you, Ruben, you can do whatever you want. You're not going to, like, lose that fat on your belly, or you're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, the beer is showing.
10 years. You go to the gym for 10 more. Yes, you go 10 years to the gym, and then maybe we'll think about it. So that's my body telling me now.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think that's a good thing to say to your younger self, or to anyone who's younger.
Yeah. I think, like, for me, like, I remember a few vivid memories when you go to, sometimes you have to go to the hospital, and then you see, like, these people who are, like, in pain because of backache and all that. And you're like, they have all the money, they have all the time, and, you know, who's going to solve your backache? Like, you just cannot solve it. Like, you have to live with it. So it's just like, oh, fuck. Anyway, so that is that. That brings us to the end of this long conversation, Linda, after 10 years since we last probably saw each other in person. If people have to keep up with all the cool stuff you're up to, how should they find you? Is Instagram the best place, or LinkedIn, or do you have, like, a website or something? I don't know.
No, I have no website or anything. I'm not creative at all, but I am on Instagram. I'm not a heavy poster on Instagram, but I'm pretty available on Instagram, and LinkedIn is the other platform where I'm extensively active. I love LinkedIn. It's my new social media. It's like I'm off Facebook, but I'm so hooked on, like, oh, what's happening on LinkedIn? So I'm definitely hooked on to LinkedIn and Instagram. So yeah.
Okay, awesome. So you'll find the links in the show notes. And yeah, I think that is a wrap for today. Thanks again for making time to do this.
Yes.
We've been at it for almost 90 minutes. So that has been quite long. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed the conversation.
Yes, definitely. I love the conversation. I think, like I said, it's commendable what you're doing. And I look forward to the group chat. Like, I'm very excited for the next steps.
And that's a wrap. If you enjoyed the conversation, please do leave us a review. If you'd like to receive updates on new episodes, you can subscribe to the newsletter or follow us on Instagram. You'll find all the links in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in, and I'll see you in the next one.